Good morning, everyone. I want to welcome you to the symposium on sensing for phenotyping and management. What can remote and proximal sensors tell us about physiological properties of crops? So this is a joint symposium between C2 and one of the communities in ASA, the Crop Irrigation Strategies and Management Community. And so I think this is our attempt at being collaborative and trying to translate not only the sensor technologies, but then to the actual application and management of the crop. This symposium has also been associated with a tour during the meetings, and the tour is the field-based phenotyping in Maricopa. The first tour session was held on Sunday, and I heard it was very well attended and in lots and lots of compliments. So there will be a second tour today starting at 12:30. So just a little bit of housekeeping, I would ask you to silence your cell phones. And for those of you in the back, there's lots of seats up front, so feel free to come forward. And I also encourage you to stay through the end of the session. We're going to attempt to have a wider discussion with the speakers, and so I'm looking forward to that opportunity. So with that, I would like to introduce our first speaker, Dr. Joe Cornelius from the ARPA-E. He's the program director. We have a title, High Throughput Phenotyping in the Field to Enable the Development of Bioenergy Crops and a New Horizon for 21st Century Agriculture.
Thank you, Diane. Good morning, everyone. For those of you who don't know me, Joe Cornelius, I describe myself to people I meet usually from outside the sector as a farmer by birth, agronomist by training, and Italian by marriage. So, I actually come to the DOE after having spent 30 years at Monsanto and then prior to that BASF, and actually started an ARS before that. So what I'd like to actually spend the next 20 minutes or so is provide those of you who were on the tour to Maricopa to see the Terra facility to give you some additional background on the Terra program in total so you could actually get a much bigger perspective. And what I'd like to start off with here is actually as you think about where we are today. I mean, most of us in this room have had the good fortune of actually experiencing an incredible acceleration of technology development over the last 50 years. If you just think back very quickly, starting in the 1950s, if you define that as the nuclear age, the 60s as the space age, the 70s as the green revolution, the 80s as the digital revolution or digital age, 90s and going into biotechnology, we're now at a point where what I describe and actually media futurists will describe as the age of convergence. And Terra actually does represent convergence in the context that what we're seeing now is all of these platform technologies are starting to come together and actually create an entire new transformative future. For those of you not familiar with ARPA-E, Advanced Research Projects Agency, it's within the Department of Energy. It was modeled after the Department of Defense DARPA version. The primary objective within the ARPA-E agency is to work on things that are very high risk, transformative, things that the private sector would like to have de-risked, and things that we can move very forward that have national security importance, whether it's energy, food, sustainability, and also the things that we work on have the primary charter of spurring economic development. So as an agency, we're measured in a large part not just by the technologies that we advance, but by the impact that they have on the commercial landscape. The other thing about ARPA-E, it's a very young agency. It was formed in 2009 by Secretary Chu, and just over the course of the last 5-plus years, we've actually been able to start building a pretty significant biology program. The first being Petro, which was launched back in 2012, plants engineered to replace oil. That was a bioengineering program. Terra, which is what I will talk about today, and then I'll add a couple comments about Roots, which is the next program coming out of the agency. All right. Why is the Department of Energy interested in agriculture? Actually, that was the question I asked when they asked me to come in and interview for this particular role. Well, at the end of the day, agriculture is where it's happening. We are at the intersection of all the planetary challenges that cut across society in general, whether it's food security, energy security, greenhouse gas, climate change, biodiversity, water productivity. Agriculture is the best game in town. And it's actually the only game that actually has the scale and capacity to be a major contributor to resolving it. So for those of you who haven't seen this chart, this is something that for particularly in the Department of Energy, where oftentimes I end up having the opportunity to meet with people who are not appraised of the power of biology. Well, if you look at CO2 flux here during the course of a year, this is a NASA simulation over North America showing winter when we've got peak atmospheric CO2 as a result of very little biosphere. We move into the spring and then the summer, where we actually observe significant reductions in atmospheric CO2. Now, for the Department of Energy that's thinking about building scrubbers that can take out, you know, fractions of a gigaton, now that's the difference between fractions of a gigaton and hundreds of gigatons. So the question is, how do we harness that in a way that actually becomes a major part of the solution? So this is the beauty about agriculture, and agriculture is only one-third of the biosphere that we've got to work with. When you add on top of that forestry and rangeland, this becomes amplified by several orders of magnitude. When we think about carbon sequestration, if you're doing this at a point source, like at an energy plant or transportation, it's capital intensive, hundreds of millions of dollars. It's not marketable. You actually have to have policies. It's actually a tax on that the general populace has to pay, and it doesn't really have scale. Good luck trying to get, you know, the developing world to actually be able to implement those kind of technologies. With agriculture, seeds are software. We're improving it every year. We have an opportunity to actually improve its performance on a year-over-year basis. It has a very low entry cost. Carbon is currency. We get paid for carbon. Carbon is, that's money in the bank. So the more carbon I harvest, the more grain I sell, and subsequently it's just natural that it would flow in this particular direction. And genetics are distributed worldwide. So what are we trying to fix? Well, we've all have had the opportunity to see dramatic improvements in our space, particularly in the field of genomics and genetics, which has actually progressed, I think, beyond all of our expectations over the course of the last 15, 20 years. Question is, how can we accelerate phenotyping? It's the low-hanging fruit. And it's absolutely incredulous to me that we're still in an analog phase in a digital age. And there's still a tremendous amount of information that we're collecting as breeders and agronomists and environmental scientists, et cetera, that actually can be done better. And to put that into context, if you think about all of us are carrying in our pocket a device that has greater computing power than what NASA had at the time that we put two people on the moon in 1969. This is the digital age. So the vision here is, how do we actually create a platform for precision breeding and knowledge farming? How do we actually converge the technologies of biology, engineering, computational analytics to actually expedite our ability to accelerate genetic gains? Combining genomics, phenomics on the biology, robotic sensors, and technologies related to engineering, data analytics, and computational science that actually allows us to manage large data sets, and then put it into the format that a breeder at the end of the day can basically make much better decisions to advance genetic germplasm. And by developing these tools for breeders, by default, we're also developing them for developing better tools for agricultural research, ultimately moving into precision agriculture and land management, and these ultimately will find their way in other ecosystems such as forestry, rangeland, etc. So the TERRA program was actually designed to be very focused. This is a big problem. Matter of fact, one of the things I failed to mention at ARPA-E, if at least one person doesn't say this is impossible, then we shouldn't be working on it. Well, there are a lot of people that said 2 years ago when we were actually starting this program that this just is too complicated. And let the marketplace actually sort it out. Well, we all know that that would take decades for us to get to where we're going. So the TERRA program was designed to be a catalyst, meaning that it's not the answer. We know it's not the answer, but it can be a model. So we actually decided to focus on a model crop, that being sorghum. The reason why we chose sorghum was it was a natural choice. It's an international crop. It's a food, feed, fuel, and fiber crop. It has incredible genetic resources, and it's a crop that is commercial. So it's something that we could actually move the ball very, very quickly, and if we're successful in sorghum, we can rapidly export the learnings here to other crops and technologies. We funded six core teams. These teams are multidisciplinary. They're led by Clemson, Danforth Plant Science Center, Texas A&M, University of Illinois, and Purdue, and Pacific Northwest National Lab. And there are a number of other institutions that are on these teams. The point is that what we're trying to do is construct field deployable platforms that actually will allow us to be able to collect data much more efficiently, create the computational algorithms that are predictive and can actually guide better management decisions, and create better genetic resources and tools that actually, at the end of the day, are the things that our farming community will ultimately use. At its core, TERRA was designed to be a network. And the elements here really have three major building blocks. One is there's one component that we call the reference component. This is a completely open source program, and its intent is actually to provide high performance data set, high quality data sets, not just to the TERRA teams, but also to anyone in the public community to actually reference them. It's also a point of engagement more broadly with other land grant universities and or the private sector as we think about developing these tools. It was meant to actually be a supporting catalyst. We also selected teams that had geographic distribution. So this is where the rubber hits the road. You want to have enough environmental geographic distribution and genetic variation that you can actually create very good G by E correlations with these particular programs. And you also want a diversity of robotics platforms. And it's also important to hardwire in what I call infrastructure investments, such as computational analytics, genomics, et cetera, that all the teams have. And last but not least is everyone has to be interconnected. All of us are islands, but collectively, we're much greater than the sum of the parts. And what this does is puts us into a leadership position to actually engage internationally. So we designed this around sorghum, but this can be any crop. And the primary intent here is for us to think about taking this model and actually building it out so that it actually can become much more inclusive. So I'll talk a little bit about the platforms very shortly. For those of you who did not get down to Maricopa earlier this week or won't be able to get there today, it's designed to basically be a platform that we can put every sensor that's known to humanity on it and assess its utility. The end game are these deployable units. And that is where ultimately we want to ultimately drive the overall program, is to be able to get deployable, scalable, economical apparatus that fit a much more broad range of crops. So the Maricopa facility has been described as Ag's Hubble. So think about NASA building the Hubble telescope. The primary objective with that telescope was as a reference tool. So the objective here is actually to have a device that anyone in the country, as they're doing phenotyping, actually has now a platform that they can refer back to or collaborate with and actually create some correlations. All the teams are sharing a common set of genetics so that we actually have some of that correlation going on. And the other thing here is this is an opportunity for us to bring in the physical science community. Most universities have excellent physical science departments, and as they're developing sensor technologies, here's a platform that we can actually beta test them. And as other agencies within the federal ecosystem like NASA or DARPA are developing technologies, this would be a place where we could quickly get them into an agricultural format. So for those of you who haven't seen this video, this is something that the University of Arizona put together, and it kind of gives you a context of how the platform was constructed very quickly. Platform that can actually be built out, so it can be extended to actually broaden its capacity for other crops as well. Just one example, and this comes back to the my earlier statement about ARPA, is thinking about not just advanced technologies, but what are the articles of commerce? What comes out of those that actually can actually stimulate economic development? And within ARPA-E, we've got a group called Tech to Market, T2M. So every team actually has to have a tech to market plan. And so as you think about, and this is an example of one team, happens to be the Boost team, which represents Clemson, Carnegie Mellon, Near Earth Autonomy, and Danforth. Every team in the Terra ecosystem has a similar tech to market plan. So whether it's Purdue, University of Illinois, Texas A&M, Pacific National Lab, they all have a similar framework where they're thinking about what are the products that actually potentially will come out of this program. So as you think about theme one, it's hardware specifically related to the robotic sensing program. It's the phenotyping, it's the germplasm that we're actually creating in the process of employing those particular robotics platforms. It's the computational and machine learning tools and algorithms that are coming out of those particular programs. And it's the traits, the genes and traits that we're able to discover by now having the intersection between genotype and phenotype by environment that allows us to discover new and interesting traits. And within a very short period of time, Terra program has been operating now for just a year. We've already been able to demonstrate, most of the teams, all the teams actually, have been able to demonstrate proof of concept with their ground robotics and aerial robotics platforms. This is an example of one, again, with the Boost team, Carnegie Mellon, Clemson, and the Danforth Center. And the robotic platform you see there actually has some lineage back to some NASA work in the Mars rover. But more importantly, and Chris will talk about this more later, about some of the products that come out of these types of programs, but we're able to actually measure biotic and abiotic stress that would be very difficult to do with the human eye with a lot more accuracy and precision than has been achieved before. And this is just another short video on the robot in motion.
Project, what we're trying to do is focus on moving plant genetics. taking out the most of buildings or roofs or frames, and then tend to work develop a very integrated system to include genetics, the wire, or fencing, occupation, climate, and area. Look at broad amounts of data and be able to analyze that to identify either use of the gene or use of the gene as a variety. The person who works through the field walking, visualizing things, and what we'd like to do is be able to do that magnitude quicker and magnitude more precisely. So we hope to use that instrumentation and getting us through the field with the broad perspective.
And from an aerial standpoint, we also are actually ahead of the curve relative to some of our abilities to actually do high throughput with different aerial platforms. I won't belabor that. You'll see some more of this later on in this morning's program. This is just a vision of LIDAR collection of data over a field. So we're collecting measurements. If you think about the yardstick where we started and where we're going with these particular technologies, orders of magnitude faster with greater precision and accuracy. But at the end of the day, again, reiterating, we can't do this alone. I mean, in many respects, this requires significant public and private sector collaborations. This represents some of the major players that are working collectively in this particular space with Terra, with the lead really being the Sorghum Checkoff and the Gates Foundation, working very closely with ARPA-E to actually be able to accelerate these particular programs. But a huge amount of interest, and the fact that these are truly a convergence of technologies, really it's a mandate that we actually have to reach out and work with these particular communities more collectively. In the last couple of minutes, I just wanted to highlight that in the next couple of months, we'll be announcing a new program. Just like Terra was above ground phenotyping, Roots will be basically below ground phenotyping. One acronym that was considered versus Roots was Subterra. But the Roots acronym stands for Rhizosphere Observations Optimizing Terrestrial Sequestration. This is even a tougher nut to crack, right? It's the proverbial black box, and the technologies that we're looking at trying to pull into this program are coming from aerospace, mining, military, things that would take decades, if ever, to find their way into mainstream agriculture. What we're trying to do is expedite the transfer of those particular technology platforms and put them in a format where they can actually provide utility. So at the end of the day, can we create new tools that will allow entire new selection criteria for breeders? Yep. Imagine a second green revolution. That's what all of us in here have the opportunity to contribute toward. And this convergence of biology, engineering, and computational analytics is really going to be the baseline or the platform for that baseline.